Welcome back to episode 2 of the VoiceOver Talks podcast. My name is Scott Tunnix, a voiceover artist from the UK and creator of the VoiceOver Talks podcast. This week's guest is a fantastic television actress, voiceover artist, and acting coach. She starred in the British soap opera Hollyoaks for 6 years during the early 2000s and has since had numerous roles on British television, both on screen and behind the microphone, in shows such as Shameless, The Streets, and Casualty. I'm very pleased to welcome Kelly Condren. Kelly, hello, and thank you so much for coming on to talk to me today. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your marvellous introduction.
Well, it's very well deserved. Now, before I jump into the questions, I'd love to play a short sample of some of your commercial voiceover work.
Yep,
so
sure.
Let's just take a listen to this.
Dunelm presents For the Love of Cushions. Everyone should be able to get in on the action. Home. We get it.
You didn't see the paramedic trying to restart my heart. You didn't see my child read a poem at my funeral. But then, you didn't see me on my bicycle at the junction when you pulled out.
At Mears Insurance, we help people achieve financial well-being and peace of mind. We don't sell a product people can touch or hold. Ours is a promise. I found this offending item in my local supermarket. It's a Philadelphia and Cadbury chocolate mashup. It's a monstrosity. It's cheese and chocolate, chocolate and cheese. Just to prove how not on it is, I had to buy it and try it. Yep, you see, as I thought, it is unusual. These are the years to be free, to be foolish, to create, to fail, to be brave, to get lost, to find yourself, to write your history. Be you. Be Nike.
Fantastic stuff. Your voice is just so warm and calming. I think the Dunelm spot, I must have heard that around 100 times already, because it's not only the TV and radio ads you voice for Dunelm, but also the in-store voice as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Have they adopted you as the official brand voice?
Yeah, they have, which is amazing.
Oh, they actually have?
Yeah, they
actually amazing.
Have. Yeah, so I did a contract with them after I did the first batch of radio and television stuff. I did a contract with them to be the brand voice for Dunelm.
So that came about after doing the original piece of work with them. They came back?
Yeah, and contracted me for, I think it was another 10 months.
Nice, ideal. So to start off with, let's go back to where it all began for you, because obviously you came into voiceover from an on-screen acting background. So how did you first get into on-screen acting?
It kind of started when I was about 13 and I'd decided that I wanted to act. I think one of my mum's friend's daughters had joined an acting club and I thought, oh, I want to do that. And the thing with me is that I'm very stubborn and driven. And if I want something, I'll work so, so hard to get it. So I said to my mum and dad, I wanted to go to these classes. And they were quite a lot of money for us then because we, you know, our family was just a normal family. My dad's an electrician and my mum worked at Marks and Spencer's and it was me and my sister. So we went to those classes. I took classes. I worked really hard. And as part of that course, they had like an agency and they just started submitting me for stuff. And I got my first job, which was, I think it was something like 9 out of the 10 episodes in the series of a show called Children's Ward.
Okay.
Which everyone's been in.
Like a rite of passage.
And that's how a lot of people my age kind of started out. And yeah, that was the first job. And then I just was very, very lucky that I pretty much at that age got every job that I went for, which is ridiculous to say that now.
Yeah, I mean, now the voiceover market is just so saturated that it's often the case that most jobs you go for, you don't get.
Yeah. I think it's the same for the acting world nowadays as well. I think maybe I just was lucky and maybe there wasn't so many kids like me around at that time.
Well, I'm sure your talent was definitely a part of that as well. Tell us a bit about your time working on Hollyoaks. I mean, that must have been a huge part of your life for 5 or 6 years. And obviously you were quite young at the time as well. So
yeah.
How did you find it all back then? And is it quite surreal when you look back on it now?
When I first joined, I don't think any of us, my parents included, had an idea of what it would be like. It was just another job, really. And I think when we first joined, I think they do like maybe 3-month contracts for your first year, so we never really knew that I'd be there 6 years later. And when I joined, I was doing my GCSEs, so I was working and doing GCSEs at the same time, and my parents were like, we just need to make sure that we're able to do both, and I did. But Hollyoaks was just the best training ground you could ever want as a young actor. You know, I always say it was my university or my drama school. because I learned so much.
Yeah, I can imagine being on the job straight away from such an early age. And was it every week you were filming with Hollyoaks, or was it a couple of weeks on, a couple of weeks off?
When I started, the cast were quite small, and very quickly we went from like 2 episodes to 4 episodes, and they didn't really, the cast ratio didn't go up as much as the episode ratio did. So we were working a lot. We were working 5-6 days a week most of the time. So you'd go in the day, you'd film your scenes. I stayed in Manchester, so I didn't ever move to Liverpool where Hollyoaks is filmed. So I'd commute home, and then I'd learn my lines for the next day, go to bed, get up, film those scenes, go home.
In the middle of your GCSEs as well?
Yeah, yeah. I think I must have had some time off with GCSEs looming, I must have done. But it was all encompassing, Hollyoaks, in such a wonderful way. And I met so many brilliant people that I'm still in touch with now, some of the cast that I'm still really close friends with. It was just a brilliant experience.
I mean, that sounds incredible. And it's great that you're still very close with a lot of the cast today. And you actually started a Hollyoaks podcast that you ran through lockdown?
Yeah. So in the first lockdown, I was just like sat in my back garden and said to my husband, I've had an idea to do this. I don't know where the idea came from, but he was just like, just do it. So yeah, with a really good friend, Mike, who kind of did all the tech side of it for me, because it was a video one as well, not just an audio. So he did all of that, which was just amazing. He's a great producer. And yeah, we just kind of got a few cast members on and reminisced and had a chat. It was exciting.
Amazing. And that's the Dog in the Pond, isn't it? Or the Dog in the Pond podcast.
Yeah, the Dog in the Pond. And it's on YouTube still. The videos are there on YouTube. And we are supposed to be doing a second series, but it's just, as you know, everything just kind of is very busy at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so after you left Hollyoaks then, you were still fairly young at the time. And did you have a plan for what you wanted to do next after you left the show? Was it quite daunting sort of leaving that and then thinking, where do we go from here? Or
I don't think I realised at the time how difficult it would be going from working every single day in something that I absolutely adored to not working as an actor. And I think when you've been in like a soap and maybe people do recognise you, the whole expectation of, so what are you up to now? Which is just a lovely question for somebody to ask. But
yeah,
as an actor being on the other side of it, you're like, oh, I'm not doing anything. So I did work after Hollyoaks. I did quite a few really lovely jobs. I did The Street, which my dream was always to be in like a gritty northern drama. And that did tick that box. And then at the same time, I went back to the Manchester School of Acting to retrain, because I'd been in Hollyoaks for so long and the industry had changed that my skill set probably wasn't up to scratch with what was needed for things like auditions and stuff like that. I'd missed out, you know, 6 years worth.
Yeah.
So I went back there, and as I was training, the guy who runs the school, Mark, said, do you want a coach? And I was like, I don't know. So I spent a year following him and training to be an acting coach, and quickly realised that I did love that. I really enjoyed doing that. I really enjoyed helping other actors and working with them to get the best out of them. And that then kind of filled the gap of acting, if you like.
And you've been doing that for 16 years,
oh,
I believe.
Goodness. Yeah, since I think like 2005, so that's more, isn't it? But yeah, a long time at the same school, yeah.
And so after that then, how did you transition into voiceover? How did your voiceover career start?
Well, I think it was the year that I left Hollyoaks, just randomly out of the blue, Endemol got in touch with my voiceover agent, but I'd literally just done a demo. So I wasn't like voicing, I wasn't really out there. And they got in touch, I think they actually got in touch with my acting agent, and then the voiceover agent and the acting agent kind of sorted it out between themselves. But they got in touch to say, would I narrate one of their reality TV series? And that was, again, it was just like a dream experience of voiceover, of learning on the job. So I went down, they put me up in a hotel in London, which
wow,
you wouldn't get now, would you?
No, I was going to say.
They put me up for 3 weeks.
What?
In the Marriott.
Wow.
Because every day they would film in the daytime. I would voice the following afternoon and it would go out that evening.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But of course, that's the nature of reality TV, isn't it? It's filmed and then it's out that same day most of the time. And that was Celebrity Scissorhands you were narrating, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was amazing. And I think the very last show that they did, it was so tight because I think they did it all in one day, actually, that they sent a motorbike with the tape to get it to the channel.
Cutting it fine.
It was like such a tight deadline. It was such a rush for everybody that we actually managed to get it in on time. So a bit like the acting in that, I was thrown into the deep end, really, and learned on the job. So that's how that kind of voiceover world was opened for me.
Yeah. Had you thought about it before while you were acting?
No, I'd not even, to be fair, I did a couple of radio plays when I was a kid, but I don't even think I was aware that that was an industry, really, that I could go into.
And it's interesting you say that. I was speaking with a guest last week about how most people don't really have any knowledge or exposure to voiceover, particularly at a young age. So it's interesting hearing from your point that even as a working television actor, voiceover was still something you never even thought about or considered. So, you know, it's interesting to hear that even if you are completely immersed in the acting industry, unless you have that exposure to it, it's often still a bit of a mystery.
I think it was then. I'm not sure it is now, because I think there's a lot of actors that do voiceover to kind of supplement their acting career, if you like.
Yeah, well, especially with the pandemic.
Yes. But certainly then, you know, there was no social media then. That's how old I am. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, it didn't ever occur to me.
And so from that point then, was it a conscious decision to focus more on voiceover, or was it sort of a natural progression?
I think from that point, because I'd done such a good series and a series that we were voicing every day, my agent then, Excellent Talent, who I'm still with now, they were able to sell me a little more as a voiceover. So we did quite a few other reality TV series for Love Productions. But it was all very, I'll sit and wait for my agent to get me the voiceover job. And whereas now it's obviously completely different.
Yeah, very different. Well, voice acting and on-screen acting obviously have quite a lot in common, but they are also quite different in themselves as well. Is there one that you prefer? Do you prefer on-screen acting, or do you prefer voiceover work?
I think when I do voiceover, I act anyway. So I will always start, my process is always to find the person and the character. So I suppose there's still an element of acting. Business-wise, I love now that I run my voiceover business as a business. Whereas the acting world, you're still quite reliant on gatekeepers and people wanting to see you. Mm. And so I don't like particularly that side of the acting world, the business that it is, that you feel like you're just waiting for the phone to ring. Whereas I feel more with voiceovers, I'll just pick up the phone and ring someone and say, I'm here. I don't know if you know of me. Here's my stuff. If you ever want to work together. I don't know, it's weird. I think as voiceover, I feel more like a freelancer than I did when I was an actor. But again, maybe that's of me.
Yeah, there's a bit more control, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. But again, that could just be my experience of it. And I'm sure there are lots of very, very proactive actors out there picking the phone up.
It's really interesting to hear your take on that. And it's also very different in the sense that with voiceover work, you're often on your own, sat in a small room talking to yourself. And with on-screen acting, you're mixing with cast and crew. There's a lot more social interaction and a sense of camaraderie, I guess. And for a lot of voiceovers over the last year, not being able to go into studios or networking events, everything has been very much home-based. And so how do you cope with that more isolated way of working?
I mean, I do really miss being on set. That is the one thing that I always adored, being on a set and collaborating with people and working with the crew, you know, especially on a soap, the crew are the hardest working people in the land. You know, they're first in, last out. It's their show. I think as an actor, you're just there as a bit of a caretaker whilst you're there on the show, but the crew are there for lots of years. So I do miss that element of it with the voiceover. But to be honest, I've had quite a lot of directed sessions, so they feel like a novelty when they come in, but I do really enjoy them. I think I did a session maybe 2 months ago now for Zettel by PayPal, and the first session that we did, I think there were like 21 creatives on the call, from different corners of the world, all making suggestions on what I could do with this line. So how do I cope? I think I enjoy the peace and quiet because when it gets to 3:30 and the kids come home from school, it's no longer quiet. So, yeah, I think that's how I cope, knowing that there will be people around soon.
So how was the transition from working in studios to mostly working in a home studio like for you? And what was your first home setup like?
My first home setup was like Harry Potter's cupboard under the stairs.
We've all been there, I think.
I mean, yeah, it sounded amazing. You know, I did some broadcast stuff from there, but it wasn't very comfortable. So there was, I like to stand up when I voice, so that was fine because I could stand up. But things like the computer had to be outside of the cupboard under the stairs, and I had to turn the clock in the kitchen off, and, you know, just little things that make one job become a bigger thing than it needs to be. I only set up my very first home studio maybe 2-3 years ago. So up until then, it was all coming through. I wasn't running it as a business. I wasn't reaching out to people. I was just kind of working with my agent, which was great. Whereas I think just at the beginning of the first lockdown, we finally finished the new studio and we had some acoustic glass put in the window. So I've now got a full room where I can voice and I can edit and I can look out of the window.
Just in time then, just
literally
before the first lockdown.
So lucky, so lucky.
Do you remember what equipment you used, again, when you first started out?
To be honest, I was on a bit of a crappy computer. It was just my normal laptop that I had. And I think I started using Reaper and Audacity, which is obviously the software. But my mic was the Rode NT1.
Classic.
And yeah, and my interface was the ID4, which is a lovely little interface. And those are now going to be my travel kit.
Fantastic.
So I'm actually on the NT1 today, this now. So I think if you invest well, and I don't mean spend huge amounts of money when you're first starting out, do you know what I mean? You don't need to go and buy Neumann just because you're starting out. But the microphone served me well. I've done some really big projects on it. I did get microphone snobbery the other day from a production company in America. He was like, what mic are you on?
They weren't being snobby towards the NT1, were they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. But he was like, so what microphone are you on? And maybe it was just idle chit-chat while we were waiting for the client. But when I told him, he didn't really have anything else to say. But I'm just about to upgrade the mic. But bear in mind, this is after a good few years. So I think I'm going to get the OC18.
Oh,
I've got my eye on it.
Very nice.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned Mike's snobbery. I hate the idea of buying something just for a brand name. But with the huge increase in home studios and many agencies and production companies wanting to know exactly what equipment you have in your setup, the idea of having equipment or a microphone that sort of ticks a box for them, even if it is purely from a name perspective, does tend to play on people's minds. But like you said, you really don't need to spend a lot of money on a microphone when you're starting out.
Not at all.
It's largely the room that you're in, the treatment is far more important.
Yes. And you know, I managed it with some foam stuck in a cupboard under the stairs. So, you know, I know people, certainly in the first lockdown, voice artists that maybe don't run it as a business and don't have the home studio, but work with their agent and do lovely work. I know for sure one of those voiced a whole television narration series from under the ironing board duvet fort.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it, how many broadcast commercials or programs where the narrators are literally sat under their duvet covers beds.
I mean, there was some dodgy stuff in the first lockdown. I think I remember hearing a radio advert, and it was a singer that was doing the advert. The actual advert was that she was doing it down the phone.
Okay.
And you wonder if that was the original remit. It's like she'd called you up to speak to you. Or whether actually she was down the phone.
Like many parents across the country, you've also had to step into the role of substitute teacher for your children for the best part of a year now.
Yes.
I really enjoyed on Instagram, you were putting out almost daily Instagram stories of how you were coping with that. They were absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed those. How did you find that, you know, the last year having to be a teacher to your children as well as running your business?
I think we're in a very, as a family, we're in a very fortunate position that we have a nice garden. And that was, you know, the biggest thing. There's lots of people that struggled in lockdown.
Yeah.
Had to cope with things far more than we did. The homeschooling side of stuff was sending me crazy. I'm not going to lie. Because we've got one that, George is 10 and Matilda's 5. So they're such a different age. So the 10-year-old needs help with learning. And the 5-year-old was getting work like colour this in or stick this there. And you can't leave my 5-year-old with glue and paint. But I did make the mistake. So obviously I'm still running the business from home, still trying to do stuff. And I think the biggest thing was that I was having to say to some clients, I'm going to struggle to do live directed sessions on the days that my husband isn't off work. But I think there was one that we just had to fit in. And they were well aware, the client was well aware that my kids were here. And so I said to the kids, right, I'm going to bribe you. I was like very honest with them. I said, here's your computer, Matilda. You just have to lie on mummy's bed. It's going to take about 20 minutes. And I said, George, and you need to go in your room and you can read. And it's 20 minutes. And if you're really quiet, you can get something off Amazon when I've done.
That's a pretty good deal.
And they were the quietest they've ever been. But it cost me a fortune. So I didn't do that again after that.
You need to start adding a cut on top of your normal fee for keeping the kids quiet as well if we go back into another lockdown at some point.
I think so.
But it's good to hear that, you know, you weren't losing clients or anything like that as a result of it.
I think everybody understands the position everybody else is in, and I hope from lockdown and from, you know, the tough time that everyone's had over the past 18 months or so, we learn that people do have families and it's okay and you can work from home. And, you know, I had clients dialing in with their kids in the background and they're like, I'm so sorry about this. I'm like, it's fine. Like, and I hope there's still an element of that going forward once we do come out of lockdown.
It makes people seem human again, doesn't it? You realise that the producer on the end of the phone isn't just a producer and that's it. You know, they're a person, they've got a family themselves. It's nice to sort of see that human element come out a bit more now that everyone is working from home.
Yeah.
What's your proudest voiceover achievement to date?
Well, that's a really difficult question. I think job-wise, it's probably got to be the Dunelm stuff. I think it's actually the fact that they were so pleased with the first campaign that they then signed me on to do the brand voice for the duration of the contract. I was really pleased with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's always nice when a client comes back to you for some additional work. You think, obviously, did something right the first time, but for them to come back and then make you the official voice of their brand, that's a fantastic achievement.
Yeah. And then I think just going from not knowing anything about the technical side of stuff or really how to run a business to where I am now, where I'm working lots, I've got this studio, I'm quoting every day for stuff, I'm putting auditions in, I'm working. I think that's an achievement in itself, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it highlights the fact that being a voiceover artist today isn't just about the voice. Essentially, you've got to be an audio engineer, you've got to be an accountant, you've got to be an expert in marketing, you've got to wear so many different hats. You know, it's really not just a case of standing behind the microphone and talking anymore. There's a lot more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, I think people enter voiceovers for different reasons. And I think there's maybe a little snobbery around this, that if you say you're a voiceover artist, then you must have a home studio and you must do the marketing and you must do that. Some actors just want it to go alongside their acting career so that they don't have to wait on in a restaurant. And I think that's cool. Do you know?
Mm.
I forgot what your question was now.
I don't think there was one. I think I was just making a follow-on point from your last answer. But what's the one thing you wish you'd have known when you first started your career? And you can answer that in terms of acting and voiceover, if you like.
Acting, I wish I'd have known to play the game a little better. And by that, I mean, I worked with some amazing directors, never really got things like their emails or kept in touch. And that's what I mean by playing the game, just being a bit cheesy without being fake. And I think I wasn't very good at publicity or being recognised or any of that stuff when I was at Hollyoaks. And I probably should have taken advantage of that in the sense of promotion of myself a little more. Obviously, now we're in a voiceover and we daily have to market, then you realise the importance of that and actually how valuable it is. But I didn't at the time with the acting. One thing that I wish I'd known as a voiceover, honestly, there are no rules. There's a lot of veteran voiceovers that would like to tell you that you must do this or you have to do that. And I'll not swear because I'm being good, but I just think do what feels right for you. Don't undercut yourself. Don't sell yourself short, but also don't stick to the rules because somebody said very early on in me setting up my home studio when I was under the stairs, I quoted for a job and I quoted based on what a veteran voiceover had told me to quote, and it was the top of the budget. And actually, if I was quoting for that today, I would say, what's your budget? Okay, I can do it for that, but then when we do more, it's going to be this rate. And I would have had a much more business approach to it rather than just going, I'm going to cost you £1 million or whatever. So I think, yeah, it's a business. Maybe I should have from the very beginning seen it as a business.
That's absolutely fantastic advice. There are no rules. When I first started, again, and you'll hear this all the time now, people would say, never, ever, ever self-produce a demo. Never, ever do it. I have never had a professional demo produced. I started VoiceOver in 2018. And by the middle of 2020, I was earning enough to be able to give up my full-time corporate job to go full-time VoiceOver. And I've never had a professional demo produced. I taught myself, you know, how to mix, how to produce audio. And I will be looking at some point in the future to have some professionally produced demos for certain genres, so gaming and animation, where there is a much bigger emphasis on audio effects, sound effects, and the whole production side of things. But right up to this day, I've never had a professionally produced demo made. And I've still been able to turn VoiceOver into a full-time career. Yes, you need to understand the process and learn the process and take advice and criticism and keep working on it. But it's just another example of there are no rules. You don't need to follow a set path of rules. Every voice actor's career and the steps they take to get to where they are will be very, very different.
I think there's also another way to go. People just think that you can either go to a studio and somebody will do it for you, or you have to do it all yourself. Whereas what I did, because of obviously my acting background and my acting coaching background, I recorded my own stuff and then sent it to an audio producer to put together. And that was an interesting way of working, especially if you've got a home studio as well, because you can play around with it. You can go,
absolutely,
I don't like that. That's not the same. That doesn't do anything. Whereas if you go into a studio to record your reel, once it's done, it's done. So I did that with my commercial demo, my corporate demo, my narration demo with a brilliant audio producer called Rob B. He set my studio up as well. So he came when we were moving into this proper studio, he came and did a big assessment and told me what I would need. So he's like my go-to. He's like the audio god. He's really just a lovely guy. And then recently I recorded my gaming reel with a producer, but from my home studio. So we did like a 4-hour session of him. He recorded it his end via CleanFeed, and I recorded a backup copy. And that was brilliant because he was a fantastic director.
Yeah.
A really good coach. And he was able to get performances out of me that maybe I wouldn't have thought of getting instinctively. And what was brilliant for me, he was able to say, that sound that you're making isn't right. You need to open your mouth a bit more. And he was called Martin at Sonic Pond. And I would absolutely recommend him if you were going to go to somebody. But again, the reels don't have to cost the earth. Everyone thinks that a demo is going to cost you like upwards of £1,000, and they don't.
No, not at all. And that's really great advice. And I think you summed it up really well in just a single line.
Yeah.
There are no rules. As you said, yes, you need to make sure that you're not underselling yourself. You need to keep working at your craft and constantly keep learning.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone's path in voice acting and voiceover is very, very different. So you don't need to follow the same path as someone else. That's some great advice. Are there any really embarrassing moments in your career? Hopefully ones that you can look back on now and laugh. I'm guessing by your laugh there might be one or two that you can think of.
I do remember we were filming Hollyoaks. It was a big, I can't remember what the storyline was, but it was a big day. It might have been maybe like a prom or something like that. And we literally, there was like 200 supporting artists there on the day. And I came running onto the set because it was my turn, all dead excited, and just slipped, but like properly fell flat on my ass.
Oh, no.
In front of everyone.
Were the cameras rolling? I mean, that's got to be locked away in an archive somewhere.
No, they weren't. No, I have got one actually that they did film where I was serving in what was then Diva, and I was carrying plates, and I walked through two people having a conversation, but by accident I smashed one of the actors with a plate in the face. I was mortified, but I have got that on tape actually.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then voiceover. I don't think there's anything that embarrassing with voiceover. We've all done the, why is my mic not working? Yeah. Oh, because I've not turned it on. Or, hold on a minute, just going to have to press record because I forgot. I did it the other day. I got a new interface and I'd set everything up. And I was like, why can't I hear it? And I was like, because my headphones are still plugged into the old interface is probably why I can't hear it.
I think everyone's had one of those moments when they're recording and you record what you know is the perfect take. Like, this is it. That's going to sound so good. And then you get to play it back and you realise you weren't recording. I think everyone's done that at some point. It's a head in hand moment, isn't it?
I did it with Dunelm the other day. We were on to do the next television commercial, and so I did the line that's going to be the tagline for the end, and they were like, yeah, they sound great. I was like, okay, well, we'll just start recording now then, because I forgot. Luckily it was very early on in the session.
Yeah, you don't want to get to the end of a session before you realize that. Kelly, what's the hardest thing about working as a voiceover artist?
Rates, quoting for jobs.
Yeah,
I find it really difficult. I find it very difficult. Because quite often, for those that are maybe newer to voices, you will quote. They don't usually get, I've got this budget, can you do it for that? Or, I've got this budget, what can you do for that? It's literally, I want this, what can you do?
Mm.
And there's always back and throw with, you know, usage is a big thing.
It's a minefield,
isn't it? So you'd usually get your basic studio fee and then you get usage on top depending on what it is. And that's really difficult because I think the Gravy for the Brain rates guide is fantastic as a guide. But I do think it's slightly outdated because certainly with online stuff like online commercials, online usage, you know, social media, I find rates the most difficult thing about voiceover because there isn't, and there can't be, I understand why there can't be, but there isn't a set rate. And then explaining to somebody how we work in quoting, you know, to somebody that hasn't maybe used voiceover before can be really difficult because you're like, well, I'd charge this, but then depending on where you want to use it, it's this, this and this. I'm really kind of passionate about the environment and things that will reduce and stop climate change. So if I ever get any jobs with regards to that, I'll always reduce my costs. And I know there'll be people going, no, but you know, that those things are important to me. So if I can do one of those voiceovers, I did one for Northern Gas Networks about using hydrogen to fuel our homes. And that was, you know, the usage on that should have been ridiculous amount of money. And we managed to kind of get a really nice figure for them that they could use and still afford to pay, which I was happy with, yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's, like you said, when you're trying to quote for something online, for example, some people would say, hang on, if it's online, it's essentially global reach. Anyone can view that, it's online. But if it's for Dave's Tyres in Scarborough, you know, how many people online are actually going to be seeing that or are actually going to be looking for that? You know, it is very, very difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, because they might have like 79 views on YouTube and that person
exactly.
Can't pay the money that maybe, I don't know, Coca-Cola should pay.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's often about who the client is as well, isn't it?
Because I think who... So when you say who the client is, that makes me... That's what bothers me morally, because it feels like we're saying, oh, because Coca-Cola earns so much profit, we should charge them more. But I think it's about the reach that it's going to get. Mm. So obviously something like, I keep saying Coca-Cola, but a big brand is going to get a bigger reach than, say, Dave's Tyres from down the road. So therefore, it's going to be seen by more people. So it would warrant more usage.
Yeah.
I think is the way that I would look at it to morally make myself feel happy with that. Because I don't like the idea of charging somebody more because they're doing well. That doesn't make sense to me. But if they're going to use the audio and it's going to have a bigger reach than a smaller company, I can understand the usage on that then.
Like you said, it's very difficult, isn't it? It's a dark art.
My husband has a thing. He works in hotels and he's worked in hotels and restaurants his whole life. And he has a thing where he says it's a wish rate, a want rate and a walk rate. And they're three different rates that he will have, three different prices. So what you're wishing for, what you want and what you would walk away at.
I love that. I think I might need to adopt that.
Yeah, but now we've said it on your podcast, everyone's going to know that they can knock us down from our wish rate to our want rate.
Yeah, didn't think about that. Kelly, what advice do you have for anyone who may be interested in or who's dabbled in voiceover in the past but is really looking to take their next step in their voiceover career?
From my point of view, I think the acting's got to be up to scratch. Even if, and I know it sounds ridiculous because you think, well, I don't want to do acting voiceover, I might want to do commercials, but I think you still need to be able to act, you still need to be able to read well, you still need to be able to bring those words to life. So some form of actor training, I think, is really important. And then I think there's so much out there that you can research for voiceover. And I get it that, you know, there might be some naff stuff out there as well. But you mentioned earlier Gravy for the Brain. I'm a Gravy for the Brain member and I've learned so much from that platform. So I think I would say learn as much as you can. You never stop learning. I still do courses. I did a gaming course the other week to just constantly better myself. And then, do you know what? I'd say just do it. Just start it. I messed around for ages, didn't want to launch myself in this sense of business because I was waiting for my website to be ready, but my website couldn't be ready because I'd not done my branding. And it was my husband that said, just do it, just start it. So I think some training in acting, I think get on something like Gravy for the Brain. I think they do a 2-week free course.
Yes,
where you could, if you had 2 weeks, you could literally go and just look at all the, I mean, the content that they've got online is unreal, all the courses and the webinars and all of that sort of stuff. You could learn the basics of voiceover or how to improve your what you already know in that. And then I think you have to have some sort of profile online. You have to have a page that you can hold your demos, that you can point people to. And then it's a case of, if you're at a position where you've got all that and you've got maybe a pillow fort set up at home, just start reaching out to people and saying, I'm here, I'm available. And I find actually that quite a few people don't mind a phone call, you know, picking up the phone and ringing them and saying, I'm around, hi, this is me, this is what I do.
Well, it's a bit of a novelty, isn't it, these days, if the phone rings?
It is a little bit, yeah. Especially, I think, with us all being in lockdown and things starting to pick up now. A lot of people are back in the office, but they're not busy enough to be busy all the time. So they're quite happy to speak to you and make your own rules.
I mean, all of that is fantastic advice, but I love the way you've summarised that with just, and I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but it's sort of been the theme of this episode, as you said, make your own rules. You don't need to follow the same path as someone else. What voiceover goals have you set yourself for the coming year?
They've kind of all gone out the window now. So I wanted to do more gaming. So I have just, like I said, finished my gaming reel. And once I've got that back and we're happy with it, I think it will be kind of letting people know that I do that, because there's nothing really on my website, or I've not pitched myself to do any of the gaming stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I endure because it combines my acting with my voiceover, which is brilliant. And just to keep working, I think if we set ourselves financial goals, or we set ourselves, you know, I want to have this many jobs by this, then it becomes very difficult. I'm really lucky that because I do work for myself and I do have a home studio, I can choose which jobs I want to do or I don't want to do. I could choose what time I record. So I'm very fortunate that I have a really nice work-life balance. So I think to keep the work-life balance would be my goal.
And that's a brilliant goal to have. And the guest that I had on the show last week, Anna, I asked her the same question. And her goal for the coming year was just to come out the other side still absolutely loving what she does, which I think is another great goal to have. Because like you said, as soon as you start making it about very specific things, I want to make this amount of money, or I want to voice this many TV commercials or whatever it might be, it can be very deflating when you get to the end of that year. So to have the end goal being just to still love what you do,
yeah,
and love the work-life balance that you have is just a fantastic goal to have. So, you know, if you can achieve that, then...
You've won, haven't you?
Absolutely. Kelly, thank you so much for your time and for coming on to speak to me today. I really, really appreciate it. It's been fantastic listening to you and hearing all of your advice. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was the wonderful Kelly Condren with some amazing insights and tons of advice for both actors and voice actors alike. To find out more about her, you can visit her website, which is kellycondren.co.uk, or you can check out her IMDb page. And to follow her on social media, you can find her on Instagram at Kelly Condren Voiceover. Joining me next week on the show, all the way from Austin, Texas, is the incredibly talented and hilarious Timothy Banfield. One of the stars of the incredibly popular cartoon Hooligans, Timmy is a master of character voices with a perfect blend of comedy, so to make sure you don't miss it, be sure to subscribe to the VoiceOver Talks podcast series, where there's a brand new episode released every single week. That's all for this week, and thank you so much for listening. For more info on the series, you can visit voiceovertalks.com, and to ask questions, join in with the discussions, and find out more about each week's guest, please consider joining the brand new VoiceOver Talks Facebook group, which is just VoiceOver, all one word, Talks on Facebook. And I'll see you next time.